Border Works Commissioner, and that involved me with the planning, I guess, of the area and the provision of sewerage and water, and I've been known to take the councillors to the water reserves and have them shown the various facilities and how the system works. It wasn't that long that after I'd been commissioner, in fact, that system was dropped by the government. The Labor government came into power and got rid of the commissioners and Mr. Croxford. And there was a big upheaval in planning. Planning went off to the Ministry of Planning, and it's never been the same, I guess, to the same since, although local government has luckily been able to pick up the tab. And became a regional commissioner. I was one of the of those regional commissioners for a number of years, and was frustrated at the lack of any accountability, and so I resigned, and Sid took that over towards the end. But I also was appointed to the Dandenong Springvale Water Board. I was with George Chadley and Keith Wishart for a number of years, because the western end of the city's sewerage flowed into the and Endeavour Hills, particularly Hallam and Dufton. And we had the backlog sewerage which converted Hallam from a septic tank area to a sewered area.
So is this the Dandenong Valley Water Authority?
No, Dandenong Valley Authority, that's another authority that grew up afterwards.
Who did all, which authority was responsible for all that?
The Dandenong Valley Authority was a drainage authority, and it was responsible for, and it was developed to produce a catchment orientated approach to drainage and where the water supply went.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked after the creeks, the Dandenong Creek and the reserve, and mainly large drains over a certain size. And it consisted of, because it covered the whole Dandenong Valley, I think there might have been 27 commissioners of the Dandenong Valley Authority who were appointed, one from each council and one government nominee, who would be the chairman, and they would strike a rate, a precept, which the councils would collect and provide to the Dandenong Valley Authority to improve the drainage.
Mm.
I can remember in 1947, was in Dandenong Foster Street, being a metre of water high and water around the town hall. And there were floods, and part of the problem was the Dandenong Creek flooded. When I went to school, the Dandenong Creek would flood for several days and we wouldn't go to school. We'd all throw our hands up in the air and we'd stay home. But those floods used to cover hills and road and so on. The Dandenong Valley Authority was given the challenge to do something about this flooding. It wasn't only the flooding, but there was the way in which it entered into the bay, the pollution entered into the bay, and there was new development occurring and something, and that would cause faster runoff.
Mm-hmm.
Poor houses would flood. The Dandenong Valley Authority had done a tremendous job. They were very much engineering orientated. To a certain extent, people said they were very rigid, they were very solid when they made an engineering decision. That might cost a lot of money, but they did a lot of work, which now you would never get a flood. They dreamt the idea of retarding basins and multiple uses, that acquisition of floodplain. They used got lots and lots of federal money to acquire land.
Mm.
And people would say, you know, why are they gobbling up this land?
Mm.
And then to a certain extent, there was a bit of a competition between council and DVA, where the council would get open space or the DVA would get it. If it didn't matter in the end, because you could utilise, they could come to an agreement because your commissioner was part of the council.
Mm.
And when the DVA got the chop, when the government looked at, well, perhaps it brings us back to the story of the Dandenong Springvale Water Board, because the sewerage for the area, Dandenong had its own treatment plant. Melbourne and Metropolitan Water Works wouldn't provide sewerage back in 1930s or whatever it was. And it was a logical extension from their sewerage trunks up into Endeavour Hills and to Dufton, when Dufton would have been sewered as part of that. So the council had appointed a representative to sit on the Dandenong Springvale, and it was comprised of councillors. And so the councillors would then, and because the system was set up fairly simply, didn't have very long sewers, it was very cheap. It was about a third the price of the Melbourne and Metropolitan Border Works sewer. Melbourne Metropolitan Border Works had to borrow money to do their works. The Dandenong Springvale Water Board had money in the kitty. It had up to $10 million in reserves, in cash reserves, to do works that had been collected from developers to do the works, and yet its rates were a third of the thing. So when the government did all this review of these statutory authorities, it sacked the Dandenong Springvale Water Board. We were sacked overnight. I think we were rung up at 9 o'clock and told in the morning we'd been dismissed. So the, just the DVA lived a longer life. Part of the reason why the Dandong Springvale Water Board went so fast was because we had 10 million in reserves, and that 10 million would give us a lot of power to fight them in the courts if we were to use it. So they got rid of us, and our powers went straight to the Board of Works. It's interesting, I would have been chairman probably that following year. I was the deputy chairman, and I've been involved then in all the development of where Melbourne Water's gone since then, and currently, and I've been for the last 3 years the chairman of the Melbourne Water South East Regional Advisory Body, which consists of councillors, and was what the state government did in place of commissioners. But it's only advisory. But as chairman, I've had a reasonable amount of involvement at trying to, and a reasonable amount of trying to give some clout to the councils in what's done as Melbourne Water's been restructured. Now, Melbourne Water's come to its final restructuring. I don't know where my job will be as chairman of the regional advisory body come January. I don't know where it'll be if I'm no longer there as a councillor come November. Mm-hmm. But I've been appointed to a few things by the government. I'm a member of the Melbourne Parks and Waterways Advisory Council, not because I was the chairman, but because I was considered to be a person who had a reasonable amount of input. I've a member with of advisory both to the Minister, Mr. Coleman, about what happens with Melbourne Water. So yeah, they're part of that involvement. Besides that, I've had my church involvement all along. I've always been a local preacher since I was a young teenager, I think 19. That's where I met Inika, and how we got involved in the youth club together. And Inika worked with me in our business in Dandenong, and eventually she'd always wanted to be a minister in the church and became minister of the word. And so it was, I think it must be 10 years ago now, we decided that things were reasonably well set up and she could do that. Community, other committees. The Scouts, for many years I was the on the Warrant Subcommittee, which interviewed all Scout leaders that were appointed. I'd been a Scout when I was a kid and very interested, and I've always been interested in certainly in the bush part of Scouting more than anything else. So I've been racked into that, but my business has been a big part of my life.
So coming back to the council, what would you think would be the highlights of the not quite 20 years that you've been involved with the council?
I think one of them was the movement to Fountain Gate. We were regarded by, whilst we were visionary, we were small, and we were regarded as perhaps second, small. When we moved to Fountain Gate, we were seen to be much more of a proper council, I guess. But I think even in the early days, we ran on a shoestring, and we tried to do things better because we saw the vision that it was something that should be done. So moving to Fountain Gate obviously increased the cost. I saw it as a plus and a minus. The costs rose dramatically. It wasn't so personal as being just down the road in a little thing, but it certainly was a change in emphasis. I think the appointment of the social planner was a high mark in seeing that we were moving into that area. I think when the planning was done with the outline development plan of the city was a relatively high mark. I've been involved with council's planning committee for many years. I was chairman of the planning committee. I don't think it's been the celebrations as such, but certainly when I was mayor the first time round, that was certainly a great high point. And I get to appreciate very much more how people view the position. Mm-hmm. I guess that before then the mayor had been the chairperson of the council and I should have said chairman in those days, but I guess one gets a bit more sensitive nowadays to that. I'd seen perhaps a much broader perspective of how the council can serve the community better and how it can shape things. Mm. I think a few of the fights we've had with the government of the day about providing facilities have also provided the high points where we've had to go out and fight for schools or leisure centre. I can remember the mayoral ball at the leisure centre at Bury, where we got involved with all the community coming along and doing these sorts of things. I guess that was a high point from local community in those days. The TAFE College and the University at Berwick, I think, were perhaps important points. I think the leisure centre at Endeavour Hills, not to the same extent for some reason or other, always seemed to me to be a bit more remote. Hallam was my territory, and whilst Endeavour Hills had been in Centre Ward and out of Centre Ward, and I'd been up at responsible for Narre Warren and so on, that boundary's moved up and down around where I live. I've always been a councillor where I lived, and but the territory around me has moved so much. Yeah, I think they're the highlights.
Any recollections of people that you'd like to...
Well, George, I think, was an old stalwart, fairly conserved. George Chadley, I'm talking about, still, yeah. But he was... young Tom, he said to me, young Tom, because I actually took his seat.
Yeah. Did he speak to you about that? That he was going off council?
Yes, and he knew I was coming on, and he said to me, because I wasn't the only one standing at that time, and he came and said, well, look, all right, young Tom, I'll support you. He said, you just be careful about, wasting people's money and so on. So George has always been a great support from that point of view, but George had seen that things were a bit harder for him. Mm-hmm. He had a business to run, and he was finding it. Yeah, I guess that there's Keith Wishart, who's been an interesting fellow from the left, but very much a friend of the white right-wing conservatives, but his heart was in the left-hand side and full of saints. Again, someone who'd grown up in the Depression and the fighting years, and so it felt hard times and one needed to be careful. It was a bit outspoken and wasn't particularly... But when Wishy gave his word was there. I think that there's Jen, who's always been a friend, and we've always had similar sort of backgrounds and upbringings, I suppose. Jen was... we always belonged to the same church, in fact, and that made it an interesting sort of development when Jim Alex and Jen and I were there, and Jim Alexander, who was councillor, living next door to each other, two councillors lived next door to George Avenue for many years. People couldn't believe that you'd have two of us side by side, so the papers would be delivered, drop one off side by side. Jim was perhaps in some ways a little bit more leftish and more greenish than I can remember. The Jim Alexander Reserve, which when we'd acquired the piece of land at Endeavour Hills and we were looking at what we should call it, when Jim left council, Jim had found it had a... I guess it wasn't a nervous break... Well, I guess it was to a certain extent a stress-related... breakdown with the school, because he'd worked in special schools, and that was very difficult for him. But he always loved open space and fought very vigorously for the birds and the trees and stopped those developers. He was probably much more the left, even I guess, than Barry and Jen and so on. I can remember that pretty well. I can remember Jack Thomas when Jack got the cancer. And yet he fought so hard to overcome, and he's at the funeral with his wife the year before, a couple of years before. They were pretty traumatic times. Mm. Pat Northeast, of course, who was the what did they call him at one stage? Not the leader. The Pat was the leader of the, and we all kind of fell in line. Well, it wasn't quite like that. They had Pat at least had wisdom and. And even when things were getting a bit more jittery, he was getting older, and it was a bit, he was probably less forceful. His line was always that the officers served the council. The council made the decisions, the councillors represented the community, and the officers served the decisions that were made. And Max Pawsey is the one that stands out. Max was probably always seen to be a bit leftish, and yet he's, again, someone whose wisdom has proved right in many of the decisions that were made about infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And Max would get a caning from some of the more conservative element about some of the decisions to be tough on the developer for the money. I can remember what I learnt very early on was that developers, the price at which a block of land will sell is not related to the costs of developing. It's related to what the market will stand. and the developer will push the price as high as they can in the market place if it'll stand it. And if it won't stand it, well then they may lose money because they're being forced to sell because they've got to pay the bank. So the costs of development were not really related so much to the final price. And there are a lot of other things like interest that probably determined that. But so that you ought to have the right requirements on a planning decision. If you require this and you require this and you require 10% open space, you ought to have that. But if you'd only required 9% and you didn't need the 10%, then you shouldn't be wrong about it. You need to look at it. But I remember Max being criticised fairly extensively for being hard on developers, and yet I can remember them also praising him very much because, in looking back on it, we'd got all that land and we'd got all those facilities and those things had been, that those roads were in place in the right place. And so I know it's been hard to be a council officer, I know it's been hard for Neil over the years, and Neil, who played second string to Pat for quite a number of years, they could see the shaping. To Jeff and to the early social planners, and yeah, look, there's the whole string of them who tried so hard. It was a new vision, it was a new place, and yeah. And I guess 21 years is not a long life for a for a council. It really isn't. And yeah, there's still a lot of the vision there. I guess that we'll still have whoever supersedes, I hope, has the vision and the willingness to push forward and do new things as good as possible. Even though it costs a bit more, sometimes people are prepared to pay.
Yeah, a lot of people have mentioned that vision, and some think it's still there and some think it isn't. But one of the reasons that they emphasise is the stability with the senior staff over that period.
Yes, it's been very interesting to see so many of them had come from the early day, the first years been there. What it's enabled us to do is have a continuity of development rather than just chop and change and move from one thing to another. Yeah, I often question it when I look back and I say, well, they've been here for 20 years or 16 years or something, and the questions end asked, well, isn't it time for a new view? I don't know. The councillors have changed. I think there's only really Jan there from the first days. I've certainly been there a long time. But yeah, the vision changes and people come in with new views. Because it really does end on that question of the vision. A lot of the tension in the early days was to do with those who were looking forward and those who were saying you're going too far. And I guess that's still there. There's still those who say, and that's why I like to see the balance around the council. It's interesting to look at those who come from different ways of life. Those who have... who are in the developing business, those who have seen the land and the problems that can occur there, those who come from more left-wing, and I don't think we've got anyone really so left-wing now as what they used to be, I think, but there are those who are more concerned about the environment. And so on, and I guess over the last few years I've become much, as I've got older, became much more concerned about what we're doing about our environment. I always did like to sit by the creek and go to the bush and dig, and certainly a bit of a mining background, inquisitive background as to what happens there, and I've seen places recover. But I think that unless you do something to help them recover, you lose it. So I guess in my later years I've been much more involved in environment committees. I've been involved with the Access and Equity Committee to try and let people get access to facilities. These are new visions, new fronts, I guess. And to say that we're not roads, drains and streets, we're not just that. We've got to do that as well, and we've got to do that well as well. But we also have these new frontiers, and we shouldn't be afraid of the new frontiers. We should look at them and say if they're to do with creating jobs or whatever it is. And I can't do all of it. It's got to be a matter of us sharing it around. As the council area's got bigger, we have to have more sharing, and we have to have more trust in our colleagues making the decision, because I can remember the years where there was no trust. We all had to be on the same committee, because in the end, otherwise the council might change its mind, might change, it might be defeated because they didn't understand. And if you've got someone I've found who is pretty opposed to something, some kind of avenue, the best way is to put them on the committee that deals with it. And it often changes their attitude towards it, to not only become a supporter, but perhaps see, even shape it in the right direction. So I would see someone who is opposed, who speaks against something in council, being the different, should be on the committee that deals with it, because then they have an opportunity to to be in touch, to feel it, and to see the vision. Mm. And I think our vision changes, new people join, but they have a vision, and sometimes we need to go away and dream, a bit like we did at the a number of years ago where we looked at the corporate plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the time's new for that, and I guess that'll happen with whatever comes out of this local government restructure, will come the opportunity to have a new vision. In a way, it's sad for me that the people refer to me as being at the tail end of the of what might happen in the City of Berwick. I'd love to think that the City of Berwick goes on and go. I can see no real reason for change, except this one that people say they want to spread our resources further, our skill and our expertise around. And that's part of the vision and the challenge, I guess. But you can destroy so much. It's better to build than to destroy. And that's what always worries me. If you can build something, if you can take something extra on, if you can do something and then weigh up the priorities. You can't do everything, but you can always be doing a bit of the new thing. I think that's the vision I see. And perhaps I also see that I'm getting old. I'm no longer a young councillor. It's almost time for me to retire anyway. If it had been the normal, if this change and restructure hadn't occurred, I would have seen this as being my last year in council anyway. What happens in the restructure, I don't know. I have to think that through and see what happens. But I've served 19 years after this year, and I think that's enough. My kids don't believe it. I don't think my wife, and nor the people around me, don't believe it. They say he lives and breathes local government, but yeah, there are other things, I guess. I'd like to stay at home sometimes. I think that's probably with it. Cake's finished, has it?